Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, this is Niccolò Comotti here at Venice 71, and today I'm joined by Tim Kruger, director of Zerrumpend Herz, if I'm not mistaken, Council of Birds. Welcome, Tim.
Hi.
So, Council of Birds, tell me just a little bit about how it all started.
It started out with a title. The German title, Zerrumpelt Herz, is not even a proper German word, but it was just there suddenly. I had it in my notebook. I wrote it down and I didn't know what to do with it. The title means something like shattered heart, but it's largely untranslatable. Everybody knows what it means somehow, but it's not a proper word, so it's weird. And I had this weird title and didn't know what to do with it. And then for months and months, we walked around looking for a story that could make sense of it, that corresponds to it. And we found this old diary, actually, of my grand cousin, and he wrote about a visit to a composer's cabin in the Black Forest in 1929 called O. Dot Schiffmann. And I couldn't find out much about him. And this is the part where fiction enters the initial spark was based on facts, and then we started from there. So we wanted a story that felt like it could have actually happened that way, but yeah, it strikes me as true somehow if I think back on it now.
Definitely. As an audience, I can definitely agree with you. And plus, probably the overall thing that I felt was a sort of a very delicate film, and the sort of like balance and subtlety. But by doing so, it becomes memorable. You know, it stayed with me since the screening that I watched, and probably will stay with me a long time. I'm really interested in your writing process. You know, on page and when it actually is on paper, how do you structure the whole thing with the dialogue, the subtle but ever going involvement of the actual characters, especially the environment, the way that you treat it with the camera?
I mean, obviously the story is very simple. It's just a composer who has gone missing, and it's 80 minutes basically about where is he, what has happened to him. And I'd like to leave that imagination to the audience. And this is also why the dialogue is rarely ever about anything important. So they mostly talk about this and that, and then they find this letter, and it's like a radio play somehow. But it's rarely about what the film is actually about. So the real film, I hope, is happening inside the audience's head.
In fact, when he's so sorry, I'm gonna probably say this word many times. When he's so subtle, you know, that you don't want to really splash into the audience's face what you want to talk about. At the same time, the camera is incredibly important, you know, not to interfere with his rhythm. How did you collaborate and also talk, you know, with your cameraman Stuprich, if I'm not mistaken?
Roland Stuprich. So he's incredibly talented. He works. The way we worked, I'm a cinematographer as well, so the framing and the blocking, that was basically my decision always. And we went to that forest cabin in the morning before we started shooting each day, and we were like, okay, I told Roland we're going to do this, and then I could see his brain to start working, and all the little lamps went up inside his head, and so the reason the film is beautiful is Roland, and the way it is shot is me, I would say.
Wonderful. Which is probably, you know, that when the real director kind of comes into play with cinematography, which is, you know, kudos to you. And always talking about images and rhythm, how much time did you spend with the different parts that actually make up a film? So the acting side of it and the preparation of the characters with the actors. You said with Roland that you were shooting usually, you know, beforehand. Before shooting, you were talking to him, but there was any preparation beforehand with the movement, because it's very intricate in a way.
We did a lot of shuffling. I mean, the whole production was chaotic. We had very, very little money. I cannot say the amount because it's ridiculously low. You cannot make that film for less money than we did, I think. And having paid for much of it myself, that was in my own interest. It also meant that most of the I mean, we just were shuffling to get things done somehow, and we shot chronologically for most parts, which meant that we could, you know, make it up as we went along. And somehow it came together like a puzzle, but that's how it always is, I would imagine. And working with actors was new to me, mm-hmm. Which I think shows to people who speak German, I think. But the actors, they did such a wonderful job, and they just eased into their characters the way I imagined them, and just felt right from.
And it's, well, let me see, because I have little time, but I want to like, kind of pinpoint, because I'm really interested. We could probably also talk about... I'm going to link it to what you just said, because it's very interesting, even for fellow filmmakers, mm-hmm. that it's, you know, you had to put a lot of money yourself. You struggled, of course, with the financing. It was a very limited budget. I was hoping, you know, that someone actually put money into it and actually push this project, because even though you're a very young filmmaker, but it's, the film is, unfortunately, is not something that we used to see in the overall cinema, you know, festival cinema circuit. It's a little gem that everyone should watch and see. But I was hoping myself that actually there was a kind of kickstarting point where, you know, young filmmakers like you, with your, maybe sharing your own perspective, can now have money. But as you said, you didn't find much from external kind of help.
We didn't have external support at all, apart from our film school. We spoke to some commissioning editors, and they were...
Why do you think it's so hard for, you know, like a film like yours, like Council of Birds, to get financing and external kind of interest?
Well, it's a very personal kind of film, and it's very long and boring, I would say, in the heads of the commissioning editors. And they are interested in ratings, of course, and in doing their job properly, and maybe innovative cinema, or is it innovative? I don't know. But cinema is not part of their job description, if I have to say it, you know. I was very glad that nobody did it with us, because we were at complete liberty to do what we wanted. And I don't think such a film is possible in the German TV market, somehow.
But you think maybe now that I'm really glad that actually you put, you know, you struggled, but you went through, and we finally have the chance to see it here, International Critics Week. You think that now maybe by having this kind of platform and seeing the power of also not just, you know, the usual plot, not the usual kind of, you know, little twist between narrative, it can also be a sort of new platform to be like, film is not just that. Film is also poetry in motion, and it's just a balance. Do you think that could be it? It was a hope for you, for, you know, the way that you actually were making the film. Did you have any ambition by making the film? Or was it just something that you wanted to take out of yourself and put it onto film?
I just wanted to make a film that I would like to watch. Nice. And I don't think there's much new about it. The rhythm, the style it is made in, it's all there in cinema history, and it belongs to the greater people who did it before me, and it's just my little way of showing homage. And if other people like it as well, it's incredible for me.
And last but not least, you know, there's fundamentally also music as a sort of, you know, subtext over all the thing. And we can also notice it in the soundtrack, you know, by the rhythm being slow. You said boring. I don't really agree. I was really, really drawn into the film. But you get to also grab the soundtrack as a sort of developing, you know, medium that you used. Was it actually developed after, so in post-production, or you already were talking with the composers?
Oh, it's all pre-existing music.
Okay.
It had to be, because we could not afford our own symphony orchestra, for obvious reasons. And
because it's sampled in a way as well, you know.
It is by Matthew Herbert, a British electronic music producer who has a classical music education, and he worked with Mahler's 10th Symphony. Mm-hmm. And re-recorded it in different places, right. Which this unfinished symphony, there are a lot of similarities between the story of Otto Schiffmann and what was going on in Gustav Mahler's head when he wrote that symphony, which was never finished. And that already was there when we wrote the script. and there's some more music that entered the frame later on by Hans Pfitzner, which is a largely unknown German composer, who came to some now rather infamous greatness in the 30s when the Nazis embraced his music and his style of music, which is kind of mystic, old-fashioned. There's a little road to fascist aesthetics in there, and that was also something I wanted to allude to somehow. Mahler and Pfitzner, they were friends, but the music is altogether different.
Thank you very much, Tim. Thank you for being with us. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio.
24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.